Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Philosopher's Stone podcast, TPS podcast, whatever else you'd like to refer to us as. We are not picky. I'm tired as hell. How you doing, Sam?
Man, I'm feeling like I don't have a baby that just shat on me.
Well, he didn't shit on me, but he did. He took a massive dump, and then mid diaper, he puked all over himself. So I had to upgrade the diaper change to a diaper and pajama change, which can be a little bit of a struggle. It was a Category 5 shit, which means it was multiple wipes, multiple. It took a little longer. It was a little bit more involved. You don't get those that often, but when they happen, it's a big deal. So
Category 5. So this is like a Milton level shit, like a Hurricane Milton level of shit.
In terms of wetness, it's the wettest when it comes to how wet it was. So we've never seen anything like it before.
Sorry, I'm looking out my window right now, and these people on top of this building carrying these big white blocks, and I swear I thought there were elephants walking on top of.
Oh my God. Have you been taking psychedelic drugs?
Not today. Sorry to cut you off there while you're mid-shit.
It was as far as shits go, it was the shit. As far as fecal matter goes, it was one of the shittier ones of the day.
Wow.
But yeah, again, not mad. Can't complain. That's what I signed up for. It just doesn't make it any less difficult when you're in the thick of it.
Does this inspire you to learn more about shit? Like, there's people who it's their entire job to analyze shit and study shit and learn.
No. They gave us a little chart at the hospital before we come home. It says these are normal shit colors and these are bad shit. If you start seeing these shit colors, then there's something going on. You need to take them to the doctor.
What's the worst, most alarming possible color that the shit could be?
Alarming because to me, or like, it doesn't say that there's like a different type of bad looking shit means a different type of things. There's like one thing they're looking for, and any of these shits could be an indication of that. Some of them look like straight up applesauce, like you literally would see that as an or like a Slurpee or something.
Oh,
you know,
weird.
Like the top of a Slurpee when you finish filling it up, and there's a little, it's like a little pile on the top.
Yeah.
Some of them look like that. But really what they're concerned of the most, from what I gathered, is you don't want their shits to come out too pale. You want nice saturation in the color.
Ew. Yeah, pale would mean there's nothing in there, I guess.
Well, I think there's some sort of, I forget what it's called. I can go grab the chart. I just don't feel like getting up because I have no energy. There's a specific bacterial infection or something that they want to keep an eye on, a virus, and it manifests as pale-colored poops.
Ah.
Anyways, overall stench has been getting worse, I'll tell you that much.
That's probably a good thing. It means there's more flora, gut flora, probably.
Yeah.
I guess.
Well, he seems like it's so weird. Babies make so many odd noises. It sounds like they're dying half the time. Like if I made the noises he makes when he sleeps, I would think that I was dying in my sleep. That's what I would assume. But alas, he is not dying in his sleep. He just makes a lot of weird noises.
Well, that's good to hear. That is very good to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I sometimes I think I have dreams that I can't fall asleep.
Yeah.
I think that.
Yep. Or I've been having like, because we just, our sleep is like, literally we're getting like 2 hour stretches at a time here. And in between each stretch, I have like, I've been having real bad nightmares, like horrific shit. Oh, yeah.
Because your brain wants you to be on guard to protect, Sullivan.
Perhaps. One of the dreams was, I've had a couple, well, I had two separate dreams this morning that were just sad, like people I love dying and not really much I could do about it. So I don't know how that's productive. But I had a really kind of, it was interesting after I woke up because it was a very, very vivid dream of me in an insane asylum living with other patients and witnessing not only the other patients slowly start getting more and more violent and insane, but myself also losing my mind. And at the same time, trying to solve a mystery as to how to escape. But So I was like, I don't know. I haven't really seen Shutter Island, but you know how at the end he's like, it doesn't start. Spoiler. But like at first he's trying to solve a mystery. Then he realizes he's like a patient there the whole time or some shit. Right.
Yeah. He's trying to locate an escaped patient. Yeah. And so, he is the escaped patient.
But I specifically remember like my roommate or whatever in the asylum getting more and more violent with me to the point where like he was like trying to kill me and I had to like wrestle him off me and like couldn't reason with him. And then I had like a weird, like my mind was, I was going insane too, because I would look at him and then I'd look away and I'd look back and he would have like his arms would be growing out of his back and his legs would be like, basically he just became like a mangled creature of like limbs not where they're supposed to be. And I don't know. It was weird. It was just a general sense of terror and panic and desperately trying to figure my way out of this insane asylum. And then I woke up. So,
wow. Huh. Legs growing, arms growing out of his back.
Yeah. It was like all of his limbs had shifted 90 degrees around his body to where they were supposed to be growing out of.
Now, is that real or is that because you were crazy in the dream?
That I concluded I must be losing my mind because he had just looked like a normal human before. And I knew he was losing his mind because when I first encountered him in the dream, he was very like my friend. And then he would like slowly started getting super aggressive with me to the point where he was trying to hurt me and could not be reasoned with.
Hmm. Yeah, I could see that happening. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Anyways, I'm guessing it's all just a manifestation of my exhaustion and the general discomfort over the last 3 weeks as far as getting enough sleep. And yeah. Anyways, woe is me. Every parent goes through this type of thing. I can't, like I said, can't complain. It's just, it is difficult.
Not every parent, Jordan.
Well, not the ones that kick rocks and run away.
Well, that's not what I meant. Oh. I meant like those uber rich parents who can have a nanny do all this stuff.
Oh, yeah. God, that would be nice. Well, you know what's weird is my mom said that back when, and I don't know when they stopped doing this or if this is still done, but like when the baby's born at the hospital back in the day, like when I was born, you would meet the baby, you'd get to hold it. Then the nurses would take you away for the night and store you with other babies. And like they would tend you over the night so you could rest.
Yeah.
And that was not the case at the hospital when my son was born. It was like they just put him in your arms and they're like, this is, you can get nurses to come in to answer questions and help you if you don't know what to do. But for the most part, you're on your own.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are some risks with that, right? That they mislabel the baby. That could happen.
They actually have like little ankle monitors that if you, because someone stole a baby at one point.
Oh my God, what?
They have it. And if you take that baby with the ankle monitor past a certain point of the maternity ward, then the whole ward gets flooded with security.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's gnarly.
I will say they tagged me with my info. And my wife's info, and it matched up with my baby's info. So he got a wristband and an ankle bracelet that matched mine and my wife's wrist bracelet. And he somehow managed to get both of them off at one point. So it is possible.
Jesus.
At some point, he got swapped with a different baby before we got the labels back on him. It's possible, but highly doubtful.
Keep an eye on him in case his arms start growing out of his back.
Yeah. Exactly. That would be quite the I'm still in the dream. I've never had a kid. I'm not even married.
Yeah. This all reminds me. I saw the Smile 2, the sequel to Smile.
Oh yeah. And
yeah, It was very good. Yeah, very good. I really love this series. It's a really cool series.
Well, I remember the opening scene of the first movie being one of the better opening scenes for any horror movie I'd seen, as far as just sheer, just disturbing uncomfortability, like feeling like a primal sense that this is something bad is about to happen.
Yeah, it's a different director in this movie, but it's still really good. I think you might be right that the first movie had a little bit of magic in that first scene that this movie doesn't quite get to, but this movie is, I would say, a better overall film from the first.
I've heard that. The first one overall I thought was like kind of mid, but I remember the opening scene being really excellent.
Yeah, the opening scene was great. The premise is really cool. Spoilers for Smile and Smile 2. But
whoa! I didn't sign up for this.
Oh, you don't want spoilers? Oh, okay.
Not for Smile 2. I want to have a.
Okay,
I plan on seeing movies eventually again.
Okay, so spoilers for Smile.
Okay,
is that okay? You've seen all of Smile, right?
Yes. Is Smile 2 called Smilier or?
Smile 2 is called Smiley, more Smiley.
More Smiley. Smile again.
Smile again. So the first Smile, it has a cool, its main like horror mechanism, I think, is that the main character cannot distinguish the people in their life who are like the smilers or whatever.
Right.
Like they can't tell who the smiling person is from who the non-smiling people are.
Mm-hmm.
And they also can't tell if they're having an episode or if it's real life.
If it's an actual smile or a bad smile.
Yeah. Like she'll think she's, like she thinks she just burned down her house to like forget everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's like so happy. And then what happens? Turns around. House isn't on fire. She imagined the whole thing.
Yes.
So maybe a better way to put it is the protagonist in Smile, they can't tell when the reality that they're seeing is actually being fed to them by the demon versus
right.
Just real reality. And the demon keeps leading them on to think that they are experiencing normal reality, like reality.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the last second, the demon reveals, actually, no, I'm controlling everything you're seeing right now. This is all fake to manipulate you and fuck with you.
Yeah. It's kind of like, remember the end of that movie with, I think it was called like Room 28 or 128 or something, with John Hughesack.
Yeah.
John Hughesack. You know that movie?
Oh, Stephen King, Room 1408.
Room 1408. Okay.
Yeah, John Cusack. Yes.
Yeah. That movie has the biggest, like, he gets out of the room. He's in California. He's surfing. He's on the beach with his family. It's all behind him. And then, like, he sees one thing and then, boom, he wakes up and he's never left the room. And the room had let him think for, like, had simulated years of his life post room only to take it all away.
Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Smile is doing that. I think I don't know what other movies do this, but I know that's also what happens in The Last Temptation of Christ. Like the whole movie is like Jesus decides to get down from the cross, I guess. And, just like live a nice life. And then, and then at the very end, it snaps back and he's still on the cross and he's like, and the devil had just shown him like this whole life that he could have.
And that's definitely happened in a few other movies where you think he's out and then he's not out. But I remember Inception. Inception sort of.
Yeah. With dreams. Well, they know they're in, or do they know? Yeah. They always know they're in the dreams.
Well, I think at the end,
he doesn't know anymore.
At the end, it alludes to the fact that he might still be in a dream, right?
It shows at the end, he doesn't
spinning
know.
Spinning top falter a little bit. But not as extreme as 1408, where it really, like, he's, if I recall, he's like, yeah, he's already recovered from all his injuries. He's with his family again. He's like living in a beach town or some shit. And then it's like years have gone by and then it snaps him back and he's still in there.
That's brilliant because, with horror audiences, the more horror you watch, the more you understand the genre.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's good horror, you know, you cannot go more than like 5 or 10 minutes without something really bad happening. So
horror is such a weird genre because it's so hard to get right. And when it's not right, yeah. It's like, it's just so disappointing and bland. It's always the third act for me where things fall apart.
That's the hardest act to pull off. The first two acts are all about suspense and creating like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And then in the third act, you have to answer that question. And depending on what you've set up, the what's going on can be absolutely nuts.
Yeah. That's why Hereditary is like such a good, to me, it was such a good example of like how well done horror can be. Cause the third act actually, my fear increased when basically the big event was happening. Whereas a lot of the time it's like, all right, I've seen now that it's like an action scene. Basically I'm actually relaxed more because the suspense has been broken. Whereas in that one, once the suspense was broken, things got even scarier to me.
Yeah. Well, that's a great point that you just made. A lot of horror movies in the third act, they devolve into an action movie and all the suspense and tension is gone.
Yes. Yeah,
you're right.
So that's a deliberate choice. Because you know that this is just how it's going to be till the end of the movie, basically. There's going to be a chase. There's going to be a part where they think they're safe. There might even be a part where they kill the monster and then it comes back. But at the end of the day, you know that it's never going to go back to that suspense.
You don't think the chase? You don't think a chase scene is scary?
Well, usually not. I don't. But I thought Hereditary, they did a great job with it. Especially there was this one scene where I think it's the son who's hiding in the attic and he just hears the attic hatch getting banged on. And then it cuts to the outside and you see her just clinging to the roof, smashing her head into it. And it's so unsettling. That movie had so many good. And like there was another part where he like wakes up in this bedroom. And you see her like do this weird clawing thing. You notice that she's hanging in the air behind him. And before he can turn around and look, she like does this weird like thing where she like crawls through the air out from where he was going to turn around and see her. It's not like she floats. It's like this weird like crawling motion that's just, just stuck with me.
Damn. Yeah, that's great. I love that. What do you think about, I've noticed like a trend in horror movies where the source of the horror is that the character or like a main source of horror intention is not being able to tell what's real or like whether the evil is real or not, or what's going on.
Do you have any examples of that you're thinking of?
Smile.
Spinal. Where they can't trust their own senses.
Yeah, I'm thinking specifically Smile, Smile 2, recent movie that came out called Never Let Go. We may have talked about that one, but basically the whole premise of that movie is the characters can't figure out if they literally have some sort of mental illness or something, or if there's actually evil demons out in the world.
I think that it depends how it's done, but I do think that the thought of not being able to trust your own eyes and ears and senses is a horrific thought to anyone. That's why things like dementia and stuff are such a rough thing to go through.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I've had like basically anyone who's ever had a bad psychedelic trip can tell you how confusion and not being able to rely on your senses is a horrific experience in itself, regardless of whether you're being manipulated by some maleficent force. Just having that level of confusion is horrifying.
Yeah. Being out of control like that in and of itself is horrifying. Yeah.
And just not being able to make sense of what's going on and what's happening to you is almost more horrifying than like directly understanding that you're being tortured or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just like losing your mind. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically.
That's pretty bad.
But I don't think movies often get that, the true horror of that happening. I don't think they nail that very often because it's a very hard thing to really like put on the screen. I think is you can see someone losing their mind on the outside, but it's really harder to like simulate what that would actually feel like from the character's point of view in a film.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me think here. Forrest Gump. No, not really. That's about empowerment.
I'm trying to think of something like that too, where it's like someone really, it really kind of shows what it would be like to lose your mind for real.
Maybe Flowers for Algernon.
I've never seen that. Didn't David Lynch have a few films like that where the characters were losing their mind?
Oh yeah. Inland Empire for sure. Mulholland Drive. Yeah, that's a great point. He's my favorite. Right. Why didn't I think of that?
Fuck. I don't know. I'm doing all the heavy lifting for you over here.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
I don't even think I've seen those. You're
ripped carrying that baby around all the time.
Yeah. I'm living
heavier and heavier.
I'm living
it's a dynamic workout.
I'm basically living the eraser head life right now. That's who I am.
Oh my God. Yeah, be careful.
Yeah.
Be careful you don't have a weird reptile dinosaur baby.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I don't, but who knows? I've seen films that this is not really a this is kind of a pivot, but one of my favorite scenes from a horror movie that really made me feel unsettled was The Ritual. You know The Ritual where they're hiking through?
Oh yeah, that's a great movie.
So do you remember the scene where, so they all take refuge in this like abandoned cabin?
Yep.
And they're like, ooh, this is creepy. And they go upstairs and there's like these effigies that someone had made up there. And yep. It's like a straw made of straw. And it looks like a man. And they're just all like, ooh, this is fucking unsettling. Like, let's just all sleep.
Very unsettling.
Together. Yeah. Yeah. So they all go back down. They sleep down together in the living room, kind of joking around and whatever. And then they're like, yeah, this place is creepy, whatever, let's go to sleep. And then they all of a sudden, it cuts, and they're all of a sudden, it's the main character or one of the main characters, and he's outside and it's daylight now, and he doesn't remember why he's outside. Looks down, there's like holes in his chest and he's bleeding, and then he hears a scream and he turns around, he's like 20 feet away from the cabin, runs in there, finds one of his friends completely confused. He had pissed his bed. He's like freaking out. He just doesn't know what's happening. And then he runs upstairs and another one of his friends is completely naked, like worshiping that effigy in the cabin. And they all don't remember how that happened. And that was like such an unsettling scene for me because just like, again, the level of confusion that they're all going through, the just horrific realization that you are naked in front of this thing that was terrifying you to look at the night before, and now you appear to be worshiping it against your will. It's like, what the fuck? I thought that movie executed the reveal of the monster while the monster still remaining scary better than any movie I've ever seen.
Wow.
Do you remember that movie?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Great movie. Yeah. Definitely know all the scenes you're talking about. Yeah. Yeah. Again, another one where people are confused. They don't realize, they don't know what's real, how they got where they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very interesting.
And then typically it's just like I was saying, like the third act falls apart, especially in monster movies. Cause it's once you see the whole monster, it's no longer scary for 90% of movies with monsters. That's how it is. But that one, they did it in such a way that the monster remained terrifying, even though you've now seen the whole thing. Which is like, that's impressive to me.
Yeah. Like in Jaws, as soon as I saw the shark fin, I was just like, just a shark.
Yeah, it's just a shark.
Just a shark.
Yeah. I wouldn't call, would you consider Jaws a horror movie?
It's not like, yeah, I would consider it a horror movie.
See, it's a horrific thing that happens, but I don't know. I just don't find adventure? It. It's not action adventure.
Maritime it's like its own. Thriller?
It's like I guess it, I would consider it more of a monster movie than a horror
monster movie. Okay.
Whereas so, the
would
ritual,
a monster movie be a subgenre of a horror movie?
It depends, because Godzilla is a monster movie, and yeah. I don't consider that horror. But the ritual to me was very much a horror movie, and it featured a monster, but it wasn't also the like method of it, this monster that the way it can fuck with you psychologically. And then the way it kills people is horrific. How it just like picks you up and impales you on a branch of a tree. It's just that in itself is terrifying.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Godzilla. Here's one. Maybe Godzilla doesn't feel like a horror movie, I think, because it's not played to make the audience isn't really scared. We're more kind of in awe, I guess,
right,
of this thing. But it's interesting because it is similar to horror, like a lot of horror movies, where the protagonists have done something wrong, or they've committed some sin, or something in their life they did something bad and they haven't fixed it.
Yeah. And that, and I think is that more of a modern horror movie thing? Because that happens in The Ritual. I think that happens in almost like every modern horror I've seen. There's like one of the main characters has like some big regret in their life. They're trying to escape.
Maybe, I'm not sure. We'll put a pin in that just for a all moment. Right. And then, but yeah, so I was going to say Godzilla is created by atomic weapons testing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So in a sense, Godzilla is like the human race that was responsible for the atomic bombs and stuff like that. In a sense, they are the protagonist who did something wrong that hasn't been fixed, and Godzilla is like their horror.
He's the reckoning.
Yeah, but he becomes like an ally in all the movies somehow or something, I think. Well, maybe not in Godzilla Minus One, but
not Minus One.
Yeah.
Minus One is probably my favorite Godzilla movie at this point.
Yeah, he's definitely an enemy. And that movie is a little bleaker and closer to horror than like the ones where he becomes friendly, like Godzilla Kong.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Godzilla versus Kong is not a horror movie, and I don't think that counts. That's just, we like seeing giant stuff beat us other giant stuff up.
Yeah, that's my god. Anyway, yeah, so back to your other point, is this a modern thing with horror? That's a really good question.
I'm trying to think because I think it's always like,
I'll say no off the bat, but
okay,
with a caveat.
All right.
So I think I'm just kind of winging it here. I'm kind of winging it here based on older horror stuff that I've read. Going back to like Charles Dickens, A Christmas Carol's got ghosts in it. That's kind of scary.
Mm-hmm. Scared me. The cartoon one scared me as a kid. Yeah.
Henry James, The Turn of the Screw. That's like a classic ghost story from a while back. A lot of the times in those horror movies, and I think this is just how storytelling has changed, but a lot of the times in those movies, the protagonist or the main character is totally innocent. It's like the babysitter taking the job at the mansion in the English countryside. And the bad stuff that has happened that has caused the horror is done by other characters in the story that we find out about it through the pure protagonist.
Right.
And I think that's probably just because, I don't know, I don't think people back in Charles Dickens' day could handle a movie like Smile or something like that. Or like, I think they would hate that so much. And so like the horror is filtered through the innocent narrator a lot of the times.
Right. Yeah.
There's still bad people that did bad things, and that's why the horror is there.
One of the things that about Hereditary that made it so effective for me was not necessarily the horror elements or the supernatural elements. It was the complete dysfunction of the family and the tension between the mother and the son that was supposed, you know, most you think of mother and son, there's like an unconditional love typically in most movies where the mother will do anything for the son. But this is a story about the mother's resentment towards the son just growing, and then it manifests in the final act where she's trying to kill him. But it's the hatred she starts having for him because of what happened with the daughter. Spoiler alert. That tension between them made it really uncomfortable. In between each of the horror scenes, I was still never able to relax because it was just such an uncomfortable relationship brewing there.
Yeah.
And I think that element has been brought back into a lot of modern horror movies where there's some sort of regret they had where they, you know, maybe they accidentally killed an innocent person and then you've slowly they slowly reveal to you that's what happened at one point, right? I think that happened.
The Shining is a great example. Yeah.
And then there's that modern one where it was like Talk to Me, I think it's called.
Talk to Me. Yep, that was a great movie.
I think that happens in that movie. I'd have to recall, but
yeah, I mean there's like one of the most overdone tropes in bad horror movies is the group of friends are out to go camping or something, and they stop at the gas station, and the gas attendant is like, "You don't want to go there. Just turn around right now."
Why does he have to be Native American, Sam?
I wasn't doing that voice. You heard that. I was trying to do like a slack jawed yokel kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
but yeah,
or the ritual. The whole tension between that group is that he didn't save his friend in the liquor store, and that permeates their whole thing. And then in Midsummer, it's the relationship between the main girl and her boyfriend is like, I forget the details, but there's something that's been poisoning the relationship from the beginning. And it's not necessarily directly related to any of the horror elements, but it's the undercurrent that makes the whole story have depth, which I think, you know, you can get your slasher movies are like horror, just straight up horror, which is creepy imagery and unsettling, and maybe, you know, the threat of violence and people are getting like a Hostel or something. But for something really scary, you need to have that element that everyone can relate to beneath that of like regret, or, you know, I think Saw really hit it on the nose when it's like all these people deserve this in some way. You're gonna have to forgive me. My brain is mush right now, but I don't remember what my point was.
No, mush. Everyone's brain is kind of mushy probably, but that seems to be a big trend in horror. But it is interesting. I think when that trend is there more strongly, like the bigger the bad thing that happened and like the less it's been dealt with, that's usually a better indicator that the protagonist is not going to make it out of the story happily.
Yeah.
So compare that to a movie like Alien, where Ellen Ripley, spoilers for Alien, Ellen Ripley, sole survivor of the ship. Mm-hmm. And as far as we don't hear anything about her having a dark past or anything like that, or screwing over shipmates or anything.
Right.
She makes it through unscathed. And then there's other characters. The other characters, they also didn't really seem to do much wrong. They were all fine, generally. They were just out to make money, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And they all die viciously.
Right. Wasn't there some main character in Annihilation had some sort of pre-movie history that was played into the final moments of her adventures in Annihilation Land?
Oh, well, yeah, those movies are weird because her, I think her husband had like been sent to the area before her or something.
Right.
Something like that. And now he's kind of all messed up. Yeah, I can't remember exactly.
I just watched a YouTube documentary on, or essay, a video essay on the Hollow Man. What was it called? Empty Man. The Empty Man.
Oh yeah, I love that movie. We did a whole episode on it.
We did do an episode on it, and I had totally forgotten about what it was about. Existential dread. His whole thing is he's never existed, even though he thought he had this whole history with a wife and daughter that died.
Yeah. Well, anyways, Halloween is coming up, so
yeah. Watch your horror movies.
Watch it. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very rare for me to actually get scared in a movie now, just because I'm an adult. So when things like when I watch movies that do scare me, like I will say probably Hereditary is the most scared I've been watching a movie since I was a kid, probably. That being said, it was a movie I watched by myself on a whim at like 2 a.m. knowing nothing about it, which is always the best way to enter a movie. As soon as you have someone else watching a horror movie with you, it's like 50% less scary than it could potentially be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you find... I think I'm still super scared by horror movies. But I do make a point to not watch them like during the middle of the day with all the lights on. Like I do watch them alone at night. Try to make it as scary as possible.
Yeah.
Your environment for when you watch a good horror
movie. It is funny that people... The emotion of fear is largely negative. And yet... people seek it out for entertainment all the time.
It's like spicy food.
I guess. I don't know. Is it like spicy food? Spicy food has the rush of not actually dying or getting hurt after experiencing all that visceral sensation of danger.
Yeah, it is a release. A cathartic release, I think.
Yeah, that's why you know, that's why roller coasters and skydiving, all these things are only fun because we know that there's potential. When your body's moving that fast, you're inherently in danger.
Yeah. That would be a great horror movie, just all roller coasters.
The roller coasters hide in the closet.
Oh, I was thinking like at an amusement park. Demon possessed roller coasters.
But I know. I was taking it to the extreme where they get home to their house and there's a roller coaster hiding in their closet.
That would be the closet.
Terrifying.
Hit in the face with a roller coaster.
I was also just watching another, actually, it might have been part of the same video essay. I forget what it's a Japanese, famous Japanese horror cartoonist, Uzumaki or something it's called. And he has this famous story where this town gets possessed by spirals.
I've heard of this guy. Yeah,
some of the imagery is so creepy, and it's like that's the whole thing, is just spirals keep manifesting in this city and killing people. And it's just like I've never seen anything like it, because it's just a shape, but it starts manifesting in all these different ways all around town. And it just drives everyone into this abyss where, like, look into it. Cause it's like, it's basically you take a spiral and turn that concept into one of the most horrific stories ever, of just a town being haunted by a shape, basically.
Yikes. Yeah, that's great. Haunted by a shape.
I think the Koreans and the Japanese have got horror down a little bit better than a lot of the Westerns, I think.
They have a different style.
Yeah. It's a little bit less, like if you watch each version of, like if you watch The Ring, the Japanese version, is it?
Japan? Well, I think the remake is better, honestly.
You do?
Yeah.
I think the reliance of jump scares is something that we need to get rid of entirely in horror.
I think I like jump scares. I don't think you can have a good horror movie without jump scares.
I think if you're going to, okay, yeah, maybe I need to be more specific. The jump scare needs to be valid. It can't be like, oh, it's just my friend. Oh, it's just a dog running by. Oh, it was just a bird pecking on the window. Like, if there's going to be a moment where my adrenaline is spiking, I want there to actually be a reason for it.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. I think they can definitely be overused and not executed well. But I do think they are, because they have to be done correctly, because it's a jump scare is a first person experience where you feel exactly the same thing as the person who's getting scared. So it can't be done in a movie where you're not really like in someone's headspace as part of the story, I don't think. Cause then it feels like a fourth wall break.
Yeah.
But, like, for example, Smile, where the whole movie is about you're inside this person's head, kind of. The jump scares are great because they force you to empathize with this person's inability to distinguish reality from a nightmare, basically.
Yeah. For me, the things that get me the most scared are the uncanny, nonsensical stuff. Like, there's this one movie called The Window or something. The Window? Johnny Depp.
The Lake House?
No, he's like a writer. Anyways,
The Window. Yeah, it is called The Window. Yeah.
It is The Window? Okay.
Yeah.
So there's this one shot that always stuck the with window. Me where it's a dream sequence and he knows that this guy's been coming around to like torment him basically. And he falls asleep and he has a dream where he hears someone knocking on the door to the cabin really loudly. And he goes and he walks over and he looks at the door. And the whole door is being knocked off its hinges, then slamming back into place with every knock, which is a bizarre thing to see because it just doesn't make any sense that the entire door would be completely off its hinges and then snap back shut. You know what I mean? Do you know what scene I'm talking about?
I haven't seen the movie, but don't you have to lift a door off its hinges or they just break?
That's what I'm saying is that it didn't make sense, but it just that's what woke him to the fact that he was dreaming was this really uncanny visual of this door getting knocked off his hinges, then slamming back into place as if someone really strong was punching it from behind. And then it was like attached to rubber band. It just didn't make any sense. And I remember that unsettled me more than anything. Mm-hmm. Or there's other stuff like Donnie Darko. There's a scene where he's like walking through the basement of a school with an axe to flood it. And in the background, you just see the rabbit demon thing just looking at him as he walks by. Like, shit like that scares me way more than a jump scare.
Well, it's a jump scare for you because you're not expecting it, right?
Well, I don't jump like I'm scared, like surprised. I just notice something that doesn't make sense.
Okay,
or is that's very fair. Eerie. Trying to think.
I mean,
okay,
a good horror movie has to have a mix of these devices. It's got to have a mix.
You're right. No, I think there's very rare for there to be a horror movie where there's not a single jump scare. I just don't like it when they are not. I hate it when it's just like your friend. Oh, you thought it was the bad guy, but it was your friend, or you thought it was the bad guy. Or it was a raccoon in the trash. It's like, do that more than a couple times in a movie, and it's just like, all right, I understand that there's going to be one time where it's actually danger. But have you seen or have you heard of the movie The Possum?
The Possum? No. The Possum. Is this like The Batman?
No. It's a movie. I haven't seen it, but I've watched the trailer. And what are you looking at? Stuff about it?
Spider baby.
There's like a puppet that he drags around with him. That's this grotesque spider thing. Yeah. And if you watch the trailer, it's like it looks like something that I think I would find actually terrifying. Because
I don't like it.
Yeah, it looks. Anyways, look it up. Any listeners, it looks terrifying. Maybe I'll watch it, but
I got one for you.
Okay.
This is a TV show called Evil that has now been canceled, unfortunately, but it's actually really good on Paramount. And the entire premise of this show is it's about a Catholic. One guy is like the one protagonist is like an paranormal investigator for the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. And his job is to say whether he thinks it's a miracle or not a miracle, or whether he thinks it's a demon or not a demon, basically. Mm-hmm. And then the other character is like a forensic psychologist expert.
Right.
Who like decides whether people are sane or insane for court purposes.
Right.
They argue whether they're responsible or not responsible. And so he like subcontracts her, and then they together now investigate various paranormal occurrences, basically. Mm-hmm. But there's an ongoing thing where she doesn't believe in God or anything like that. But there's an ongoing thing where she experiences extremely vivid night terrors.
Right.
And she can't tell if they're real or not. And so an ongoing question in the show is, are these night terrors real or are they imaginary? And we start to think that maybe they're imaginary and maybe they're real, and it pulls you back and forth. But again, super interesting conflict, because the character, she's not quite sure what's going on, if they're real or not real.
Mm.
So it does seem to be a lot more in your face, as like, this is an interesting thing to think about. Are these things real or are they not real? Can we tell? Can we actually figure it out?
Does it matter? Is the experience itself what matters?
Yeah. I won't spoil it, but the answer is a lot more interesting than you might have expected, because it's a very cool show.
Well, then why did it get canceled, Sam? Huh? I'm just kidding. Was it on Netflix?
Paramount Plus.
I will say one of the best examples of a TV show in the vein of horror that I've ever seen, and I think it's pretty highly acclaimed show. I've watched it through multiple times, and both times I was like incredibly impressed with the quality and the writing and everything that made it what it is. And that is The Haunting of Hill House.
Okay. That's a good one. Yeah. I of course read the classic novel by Shirley Jackson as well.
There's a book? I didn't even know that. But
that's the only book I've ever read in one day.
Really?
That's how good it is.
To me, that what made that show so good was obviously the relationship between these siblings and their parents, and you just feel, especially the fact that you watch like half the show is them as kids and they're like innocent, and then you see how their lives turn out as adults, and it's just heartbreaking for like all of them. And and that's another one where it's like they all experienced these Haunting of Hill House, and the dad always maintained it was real and it was an actual thing that happened. And then the one kid writes a book about it, and then the rest of them are, you know, they now think that it was just bad things happened to them and there was no supernatural element to it whatsoever. But think of all the horrific things that happen in that show to all these kids. It's a heartbreaking story, really, at the end of the day. And it needs to be more than just, you know, a group of people dying horrific deaths for it to really, truly be scary. You have to know who these people are and what their real life fears are and what really makes them like anxious and tick, and like what about these things. Cause that's when the real horror sinks in, is like, this is like the worst thing that could have happened to this person because of this part of who they are. It's not just a random death or a random ghost is killing them. It's something ties in from their childhood. Every one of those characters had something. The way that their story ends was directly related to what happened to them and their specific fears as children.
So in a sense, their fears come true.
Yes. Which makes it more horrific, because you know them so well by the end of the show that you're like, this is the worst outcome for this specific person.
Yeah, there definitely seems to be something about horror and its connections to trauma a lot of the time, symbolically. Yes. I guess if it's not outright in the story, then it's done symbolically.
Yeah. I think,
and
so
Smile does it outright and symbolically, I guess.
Yeah,
that's like the whole premise of the movie.
I mean, it's really, really on the nose with the movie The Ritual, because there's like so many scenes near the end where he's actually back in the liquor store, sort of. And like reality and that moment of regret are like intertwining. And that happens quite a bit now, I think, where the main source of regret comes back to the haunt them at the end. But in Hereditary, it's a little bit the whole thing. You see it from beginning to the end, the rottenness of the relationship starts to rot and it just becomes super uncomfortable. And then the, you know, the background story of the cultists and everything, that's kind of like, you don't even really need to know the ins and outs of that in Hereditary. You just kind of have this vague sense that there was a cult revolving around the story, but that's really kind of that's like a background plot that's not even that important.
But isn't she like a demon possessed or something?
So her family was part of, her mom was like the leader of this cult, and they needed to get this demon spirit into its new young body or whatever. I forget the detail. Like I said, it's not even that important.
Yeah, that's another thing.
The main horrific thing is the mother being overcome with hatred for her son.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's another, that's like a satanic horror trope, is impregnation with Satan's baby. Mm-hmm. I guess that's kind of like Alien. Alien is kind of like a Satanist thing about being impregnated with a hellspawn creature. Kind
oh
of
yeah.
Against your will.
There's so many themes of like rape in Alien. Yeah. That's like the whole thing, basically.
The main theme.
Yeah. And then having to bear this child. I mean, I think that's a theme in a lot of
horror movies. But it never implies, I guess, because they're doing, that's an interesting thing, because in the Alien movies, the protagonist is usually female, and she's not like a standard female horror protagonist where she has a dark past or she's like totally innocent. She's like a real protagonist. And you have to do that, right? Because the whole point of rape is that the victim doesn't deserve it in any way.
Yeah. But now you mention it, like what do you think the percentage of female protagonists, male protagonists in the whole genre is?
More female.
Way more. I guess that's just because, you know, it kind of, for the most part, takes away the aspect of the, I don't know, muscling your way out of a situation, potentially.
Yeah. And audiences are way more likely to feel empathy for a woman in danger than for a man, probably.
That's true. And also, there's always that one turn where a man shows up and then you think that's it, you're safe. And then inevitably the man gets killed brutally.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
that happens all the time. It's a very trope heavy genre, like more so
it
than
is.
Most.
It is. Them. And that's it. I think it almost has to be. It almost has to be, because the whole point about it, the whole point of horror is like kind of like comedy. You know, you have to surprise people.
Yeah.
And so people have expectations in a horror movie. But like one of the main ones is, if a certain amount of time has gone by and nothing horrible has happened, then you just start to itch because you know something is coming. Like like in Smile 2, it was to the point where I would get a spidey sense and I'd be like, in 3 seconds, something insane is going to happen. And then it would.
Is that good though? Is that good to be that
predictable? I was like on edge the entire movie, because I was constantly feeling like, oh my God, something is about to happen.
See, I thought that, I think the ones that I really like are the ones that do not meet my expectations in that way.
Because Smile, you're just always waiting for her to suddenly notice the detail makes her realize, oh, the demon is controlling this right now.
Right.
So you're always like, you're paying attention to every single little fucking flicker of someone's lips. I'm like, was that a smile?
Have you seen, that's kind of like, I thought the movie It Follows had a very similar thing.
Okay.
You haven't seen it fall. Oh, dude. Excellent.
No, it's a gap in my resume.
I think that I remember thinking the Smile movie kind of ripped it off in some that sort of way a little bit.
You pass it along to the next person.
Yeah, but also, so it follows is like this demon that follows you around, if it catches you, it kills you, but it walks at a snail's pace, basically. It just walks normally, and it can look like anyone. So you never know. So like in Smile.
Your only giveaway is how slow it's walking.
Well, it just walks at a normal pace, right? It will never run. Okay. Okay. So just like in the Smile movie, she can't distinguish whose smile is the evil smile and who's just smiling normally. And that, and it follows, they use
keep going. I mean, in Smile, it's blatantly obvious who's smiling like a demon. But anyway,
they definitely play with other people smiling as a part of it.
Yeah, they play with it. But you, when someone is a smiler, you know.
Yeah. Well, and it follows, they do the same thing, but it's with seeing someone walking towards you in the distance.
Okay, right.
Because anyone walking towards you from in the distance could potentially be the demon. Right. And to make it worse, only the person that has the demon attached to him can actually see that person. So it's a lot of screaming, can you see them? Type of thing.
Yeah.
But I thought that movie actually did a really good job with that gimmick. Really good job.
Maybe I'll have to check it out.
All right, well, I think I'm hitting my wall here. There's nothing more horrifying than not ever sleeping more than 2 hours at a time. So hopefully I don't have any more nightmares. Happy Halloween, everyone. I guess we'll talk to you later. Watch It Follows, watch The Ritual, but more importantly, watch Hereditary by yourself if you dare.
And Smile 1 and Smile 2.
Two wrecks from Sam, Smile 1 and 2. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I've seen recently that was really good in that genre.
The TV show Evil on Paramount Plus. Highly recommend. Never Let Go.
Haunting of Hill House. If you haven't watched that TV show, it is the perfect TV show to watch leading up to Halloween. It is very good. Anyways, that's it. Talk to you next week. Bye.
Boo.